I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. But the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blowed his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to the Confessionals podcast. I'm your host, Tony Merkel. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me. Just get a hold of me. If you want more shows on a weekly basis, go to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member. Members get access to Thursday shows, which are member shows, Tuesday shows ad-free, and overtime content when it's available right there on the website and on the members app. And I'm not going to go any further on anything else because we got an awesome guest here today. So I'm going to spare everybody else on Merkel Media Films and how you can get that right there at MerkelMediaFilms.com. We're just going to get right into the guest today.
This is so good, by the way, too.
I was going to move past it, and I was like, nope, Joseph's going to get mad if I do. So,
The Shape of Shadows.
The Shape of Shadows, an Expedition Dogman, MerkelMediaFilms.com. Go ahead. All right. So actually, you just said that you guys watched it last night.
Oh, yeah,
night.
We purchased it. We didn't rent it. We purchased it because I wanted to own that sucker.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So we just recently opened up MerkelMediaFilms.com. We were sending people to Merkel.media, and then I opened up a whole new website where purchasing can happen and everything. It's been pretty cool so far.
That's amazing.
I'm waiting for the logistical nightmare of something that I didn't think of beforehand, but until then, I'm going to just bask in the funness of it. So, but today we have Alan and Evan DiDio in the house. How you guys doing?
So good.
Pretty spectacular, actually.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys are here.
Such big fans.
No,
and
stop.
Seriously, yeah. So excited. We were just talking about before we came on how we were at the National Religious Broadcasters Conference, Convention, whatever it is, and in Nashville, Tennessee. And there's so many people there who love this program.
It's wild.
There's this weird crossover that's taking place right now. And everybody wants to talk to Tony Merkel. And I can't believe I'm the guy that's sitting here. So it's
well,
awesome.
Tell them to come on in.
Yeah. The water's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we got microphones and we can just do whatever. So that's wild. I mean, sitting on this side of things, you don't really have a good gauge. Like everybody is just numbers on the screen, and right. you assume that people who are listening are the truck drivers, the people who are, you know, doing the just the everyday blue collar type works. Like I don't ever expect, you know, somebody that I know to ever know who I am and listen to the show. But I guess the reality is you do it long enough, eventually it's going to happen, you know? Yeah. Like we recently broke 35 million downloads total for the show in the last 7 years.
That's wild.
And so it's like, of that 35 million, you wonder, who actually has ever listened to the show?
10% of the population.
That's wild,
yeah. right? So, I mean, you start thinking like, huh, I wonder if LeBron James ever heard me bashing him on my show.
That's
interesting. Yeah. Because I got some thoughts about that guy.
Yeah, I got some thoughts about King James.
Yeah.
I got exactly. a King James for you.
Did you ever hear some of the stuff about him and the stuff that he's involved in behind the scenes?
I can't imagine.
So let me just tell you, his ritual during pregame is straight evil. Like he throws up the sixes and like it all the symbology that he does, it's clear that he knows what he's doing.
Whoa.
And then he has years ago, there's this guy, Larry, not Raglan. That's one of our friends.
Larry Raglan.
He's actually coming on the show later
is
this
he
month.
Really?
Yeah.
From what's his show?
Alabama.
In Alabama.
Yeah.
The Big Picture.
The Big Picture Report. Yeah. But I forget the other guy's name, but he went on my friend Sam Tripley's show. And he started dropping all this knowledge. And like apparently LeBron has this tattoo on his chest and it's symbolic of this like Bublé society or something like that. Bublé society.
Not Bublé.
I was about to say.
Yeah, not like Michael.
The singer.
Not Michael. But it's just, you know, all these conspiracies and stuff about LeBron. But one thing's for sure, just seeing what he does on video, I'm just like, yeah, I think there's a reason why you're 40 years old and playing like you're 18 again, you know? So I don't know what goes into that, but we're not here to talk
and
about
such
that.
A divisive figure too. So that makes sense.
Very,
right?
Yeah. Very frustratingly divisive.
Yeah.
But I want to let people know before we get carried away with the conversation, because we get together and we just start talking. Remember when we were at the conference last year?
Oh yeah, man.
Like,
so those who don't know, we had Tony Merkel, we had a media conference for the Christian community, showing them how to do media well. Who better to have in the room than Tony Merkel?
I learned so much.
But it was, so we have this green room, I hate green rooms, but we have the room for speakers and to eat together. And we start talking about, this is a room full of pastors, right? And we start talking about Nephilim and everything. And it was, what was it, 2-hour conversation?
Oh, yeah.
So we determined from that moment, anytime we have guest ministers over, even at the next ARM conference that we're going to be doing this year, there's going to be cameras and microphones in the green room because that's where the good conversations happen. And isn't it good to have a room full of ministers that you can record what they're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it was awesome. People need to go this year, especially if you're in the social media realm and all that. I mean, I learned so much. I mean, one of the things that always comes through my mind since then is, I think one of you guys said it, I can't remember who, but somebody said, YouTube is the sun that the social media universe revolves around.
Yes.
And I'll never forget it because to that point, I just looked at YouTube as like, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's when we started trying with YouTube. And since, in fact, I just looked at it recently, since August last year, I think we've grown almost 30,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Wow.
Because we've been trying, you know, and, you know, just like the thumbnail images tend to look the same and similar. And it just like, we took a lot from that, even to the thumbnail images being the title on there being different than the actual title mm-hmm. of the video, took all that into consideration. And we've been just really just kicking butt with it. So
that's so cool to hear.
We learned all that stuff. So people who are watching this on YouTube, the reason why we're even doing YouTube consistently right now is because these two guys right here.
Oh, come on.
Like seriously, that's honestly the God truth. So we learned a lot. We walked away really inspired. And it was really just like you mentioned about that conversation. I was sitting there. I was just like, this can't be real. Like I'm sitting here with these people talking about like, did I bring up Nephilim again? Dang it. You know?
I don't think you did either.
I don't think so.
You were just in the room and I see this grin come over your face. You know, like.
It was one of those things where you're like, oh, they just hit that button. Like, you know? But you just recently are coming out with a book.
Yeah, this could be your fault too. I don't know.
You think so?
I don't know.
Summoning the Demon, AI, Aliens, and the Antichrist.
Yeah.
1,000-foot view. What's it about?
Well, it began when I saw a clip of Elon Musk when he was asked about artificial intelligence, and he said, with AI, we are summoning the demon. And then he talks about a movie where we see someone draw a pentagram on the floor, and they're invoking a demon, thinking they're going to control it, and he said, how's that going to work out for him? Because we know it's going to turn back on him, and
mm-hmm.
And with that, I started to, I realized the church needs to understand artificial intelligence, how it can help. I'm not one of these people who are saying, just throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah. We need to learn how to dominate it, not run from it. Mm-hmm. We need some people in the tech space, some sleeper cells, Holy Ghost sleeper cells, who are putting gospel algorithms into these chatbots, into these language models. So I think we need to learn how to utilize all these aspects for the gospel. But at the same time, does the Bible predict artificial intelligence? And if it does, what does it say? And what should the church's response be? How do we dominate it? How do we kind of toe that line? So I started researching and diving in, writing about summing the demon artificial intelligence. Well, then you start going down that path, and then you run into transhumanism. And when you start running into transhumanism, which is also in biblical history, you start running into aliens. Mm. And then, of course, the Antichrist agenda overarching all of these things. And as fascinating as it may be, the church has run from the subject matter for a long time, when we actually have a more interesting narrative, I think, biblically.
Yeah.
Very fascinating. So I thought, well, I need to write a book about this, so that from the Scully perspective, I often talk about being that skeptic, you know. Mm. And my journey in discovering, what does the Bible say about this? And it has a lot, actually quite a bit to say about these things. And what should our response be? How do we navigate through all of this? So that's where summoning the demon comes in. And my son there, he designed the cover.
I know that. I saw that, and I was like, yep, like that's his signature.
Yeah.
Like, you have your own style, dude. Like, when I saw that, I was like, Evan did that. In fact, when I was looking at it earlier today, I wanted to make sure I brought that up, because it's just, you have a style, and like an artistic style that is, it stands out from everybody else.
Thank you. And there are actually some hidden images in there.
Oh yeah. So you could stare at that for
that's
a while.
That's my face.
Yeah. There's Pat Markle.
I'm not an alien. What?
I probably spent, you know, 15 hours, 20 hours, and just kind of finding little layers. symbolism,
yeah.
You know, little things are lined up in a certain way. So it's if you spend some time to look at it, you might notice some cool things.
I've tried copying your style. It doesn't work. So I just gave up and, you know, use AI to make my show art.
You can't
so.
Get that on Canva, that's for sure.
No, you definitely can't. But this book is jam-packed with information. I want to just read through these chapters for the audience so they can just get a taste of what we're talking about here. Because when I was looking at these chapters, I was like, yep. Chapter one, Manhattan Project. Then AI and the Tower of Babel, AI and biblical prophecies, echoes in Revelation. Chapter four, a thought experiment, the great deception. An overview of AI, six UFOs in the Bible, seven projects, Project Blue Book,
mm-hmm.
eight Skinwalker Ranch. Okay.
Been there, right?
Yes. Nine, Close Encounters or Demon Possessions. Chapter 10, Project Bluebeam, Genesis of a Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Chapter 11, The Sons of God. And then we follow that up with chapter 12, The Emergence of the Nephilim.
It's so good.
Chapter 13, The Antichrist Spirit. Chapter 14, Antichrist Agenda. Chapter 15, Warning, Watch for This, all caps. And chapter 16, Satan's End Time Strategy Exposed. And I'm just like, man, could you make a book more tailored for my audience? Like, I was like, holy crap.
It's so much fun, right? This has been, I've written five books. This is by far the most fun to research and to write. I think it's the most serious. I think we've laughed at this subject matter for a little too long.
Yeah.
I think we need to get very serious about it, but it's been a blast.
Oh, well, I mean, I believe it. So let's dive into some of this. I mean, I want to talk about some of this stuff in here. We'll let the conversation kind of unfold from there.
Sure.
But the one that just sticks out to me, because it's been talked about a lot on my show recently, the idea of emergence of the Nephilim. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, with some of this stuff, I write it in parts like a mystery, because I don't want it to be just dry facts and information. So I don't want to reveal too much, but we can just talk here, right?
Yeah,
we can just be honest. This isn't like a lot of podcasts.
No.
The rise of the Nephilim refers to a couple of things. Now, biblically, there's very interesting prophecies concerning the rise of Nephilim in the last days. So when we see the first prophecy given in Scripture, this is in Genesis chapter number 3, where God comes down after they have been tempted and they have fallen. And he gives this prophecy against the serpent. And he says to the woman, your seed will bruise his head, his seed will bruise its heel. Mm-hmm. And we walk through those scriptures, and it's fascinating, because when we in Bible interpretation, we look at the entire verse and we interpret it. We have to interpret it the same way. So if it says that to the woman, your seed will bruise his head, we know that that's referring to a literal individual. This is a real person who's going to come to the earth. His name is Jesus. So if that seed is a real person, then the other seed reference there, Satan's seed, must also be a real person and an individual. So there's a couple things we get from that. Number one, prophecy is not what we've thought it is, or it is not limited to what we have thought. Prophecy is a weapon. The first weapon wielded against the enemy is a prophecy against him. So shows why he hates prophecy so much. And I believe prophecy makes the Bible unique out of all holy books. Secondly, when we look at this prophecy, we see that there is going to be a seed of Satan that comes into the earth that is speaking of the Antichrist. I believe this is directly referring to the Antichrist, and I'll tell you why here in a moment. Then we skip to Genesis chapter 6, which you're very familiar with, mm-hmm. which there's a great book about the Genesis 6 conspiracy.
Gary Wayne. I just had him on the show.
Gary Wayne. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So good. Such a good interview, by the way.
I'll hook you up if you want to talk to him.
Any day.
Yeah.
Any day of the week. I'll cancel whatever's going on.
He's got information for days.
Yeah. That's the first installment, right?
And he just came out the number two, and he already has 3 and 4 planned.
See, mine is the summary, basically. Like, you know, for an introductory, get your feet wet and thing. That's more an advanced.
When he wrote the first book, it was 1,200 pages, and the editor told him to drop it down to 800.
Whoa.
It's crazy. What I did is I bought it digitally, and you can do word searches, and I just use it for a resource of
understanding. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
So anytime like somebody says something, I'm like, I think Gary wrote about that. I do a word search. Oh, yeah. Gary says that's a Nephilim. Keep going.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So Genesis 6, obviously the sons of God come down and mate with the daughters of men, and we have this race of giants that's born into the earth. I've interviewed Jewish rabbis who have thought that that was some sort of, there's some natural explanation for that, mm-hmm. but there's no natural explanation for the sons of God and the daughters of men creating a race of giants. So we see this hybridization. Then we fast forward, and I'm skipping through a lot here. Then we get to the Tower of Babel, which I think is enormous implications, Nimrod, mm-hmm. and the history of who that individual was, possibly the first transhuman, as far as not in the way you think from Genesis 6 only, but technology mm-hmm. merging with flesh, which is fascinating.
Wild.
It is wild.
And this is why you say that some pastors don't want to touch this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's so beyond typical understanding. Like we're taught to believe that back then they didn't have technology that we have today. How is that possible? What you just said, according to those that thinking.
Well,
you know?
It doesn't take a genius to look back at history and ask, are we getting smarter or are we getting dumber?
Yeah.
And when you look at the pyramids for an example, we have no clue. You know, how did they do that?
Yeah.
And what are they there for? I know there's a lot of ideas about it. But we still, with our technology, we're trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And I think I've got some pretty good ideas, and I think you do as well, that I talk about in the book, as a matter of fact. But obviously these people are smart. Adam, the first man, named all the animals. Do you know any individual right living today who can name all the animals? Mm-mm. This is the first guy ever walked the face of the earth. So these are some pretty sharp individuals who lived an extended period of time. You're talking how much knowledge can you accumulate in 500 years, 900 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so these are some pretty smart people. And so we have this transhumanism that takes place, which I go into the different ways Nephilim can manifest in the earth. One is through that hybridization of the sons of God and the daughters of men. But what happens when this alien technology, if you will, is imparted to humanity, mm-hmm. where these nefarious spiritual beings impart technological information that allows a human being to interface with the spirit world? And it is believed that Nimrod was one of these individuals. Nimrod, the manhunter, cannibalistic individual, hunted human beings, and is trying to build a tower to heaven. What does that mean? He's trying to build a portal. He's trying to build an access point for heaven. Now, God comes down and confounds their language in order to stop, because unity is one of the most powerful forces in the earth. And if everyone's speaking the same thing and everyone's saying the same thing, the Bible said nothing that they imagined would be impossible to them. So they're going to actually accomplish this. They're going to build a portal and access things that human beings have no right accessing. And the same reason why man was banished from the Garden of Eden, so that they wouldn't touch of the tree of life and live forever in a sin-soaked condition. God's plan has always been redemption. So he's put up these guardrails, not to keep us from having a good time. He's trying to lead us down a path of redemption, give us time to repent and an ability to access everlasting life. Of course, the enemy's trying to get us, trying to destroy us because we represent the apple of God's eye. And that's how he hurts God. Am I?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just shotgunning this real fast.
I'm tracking.
Okay. So the Tower of Babel, there's a whole chapter on the AI and the Tower of Babel and how those things parallel, because artificial intelligence is now pulling down that barrier that separated us from accomplishing Nimrod's vision. So Nimrod, the second Antichrist-like figure in Scripture, he brings the world together into one language, one speech, one confession, and they're trying to build a portal to heaven. God stops that by confounding their languages. In the last days, the Bible talks about an Antichrist figure who's going to come and bring the people together, one world religion, one world government, one language, one speech. And that one language, one speech is going to make a lot of things possible for the Antichrist agenda. So what does artificial intelligence do? Well, I've been on the mission field. I've worked in the third world. I've worked in places where it's actually illegal to preach the gospel and not hindered at all in communication, because I can use this device and I can talk to someone and it'll translate it and then translate it back to me. So the wall that was put up to keep the Antichrist agenda from pressing forward is being torn down through artificial intelligence. So then we get to Daniel chapter 2, and there's a very strange prophecy in Daniel chapter 2 where they will mingle themselves with the seed of men. This deals with the iron mixed with clay. Again, in the book, I go into great detail with this. There's this dream that Nebuchadnezzar has, and the last kingdom that he sees is iron mixed with clay. In that prophecy, some have said, well, that's different nations coming together or different religions coming together. Other people have said, could it be transhumanism? Could it be man and machine, the metal and the mud coming together? Could that be man and machine coming together? Or could it be representative of the rise of Nephilim in the last days? Well, when you look at the prophecies concerning the Antichrist, his supernatural abilities, I think it certainly could be. So again, that was a, you asked a very interesting question. I don't think anyone had asked me.
Well, in regards to the Daniel, and just in case those who are listening don't know what this dream was, Nebuchadnezzar sees this statue, right? There's a lot more details in this. Starts at the head and works his way down to the feet. And then at the end, this rock comes and knocks the feet out from under it, right? And we know the rock is Jesus Christ at the end coming and finishing it off. But he accurately lays out, and I could get the order wrong, but I believe it's Persians, the Persian Empire, which had ended, right? So that was historical for him. The Babylonian Empire.
Babylon was first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then the Persians, because the Persians took over Babylon. Then the Assyrians, and then the Roman Empire. And then you see these feet of clay mixed with iron.
Yeah. Daniel, it's actually a very specific prophecy. Daniel is one of the most supernatural books in the Bible. People have tried to argue that there's no way Daniel could have written this because it's so detailed in how it lays out these things. But yeah.
Just in case those who are listening don't know, he accurately laid out hundreds of years
ahead of time. And named names.
Yes.
And named names in the book of Daniel. So, and then he indicates that they will mingle themselves with the seed of men once again. Seems to be a reference to the Nephilim that we see mentioned in Genesis 3, mentioned in Genesis 6, and then in the last days, the rise of this. Now, does that mean that angels are once again cohabitating, if you will, with the daughters of men and giving birth to this Nephilim race? Or is there this demonic technology that's being infused with the human race that's giving birth to something else, that's changing us into something else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the technology angle of it is something to be strongly considered.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started hearing about the Nephilim, because nobody taught me about Nephilim in the church. Like, I heard about Nephilim, I think, the first time I was on Sasquatch Chronicles. I'm like, what is this Nephilim thing? That's not in the Bible. You know?
Wow, it's all over.
Yeah. And so I the idea of the return of the Nephilim, when that started emerging, I'm like, what does that mean? Like, it's going to happen all over again the way it did then. And the more you learn, the more it's like, I think there's going to be a real technological aspect to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you guys are, but for me, like, I don't want to say it's concerning because it's prophetic. So it's like, well, it's do you believe it?
There's a plan.
You know, it's like, you should expect it.
Yeah.
You know?
So. That doesn't mean we lay back and bury our head in the sand and say, oh, right. Well, you know, it's going to happen. The example I give, because a lot of church people take the wrong tack with this and they get kind of a defeatist mentality.
Yeah,
the sense of like, well, we know what the Bible says. So, you know, what's the use? Like, I don't need to be involved in my local community. There's no reason trying to pray for.
It's all going
to
burn anyways.
Yeah, exactly. No. And so my question to them is, do you know that you're going to die? And they say, yes. I said, well, do you eat right? Well, I try to. Do you exercise? Well, why? If you know it's going to end, if you know you're going to die, if the Lord tarries, then why do you eat right? Because you know as long as you're here, you want to be as strong as you can, as effective as you can, to occupy until he comes. And I think that's the position we need to have, and that's what I advocate for in summoning the demon, that we need to, it's time to wake up and realize it's time to engage.
Yeah. Do you feel like and I mean very current times, like the last couple of years, does it feel like to you that the world is turning more towards a spiritual route? Because I'm kind of like in this bubble that I live in with what I do, that it feels like that to me, but I don't know if, you know, when you're outside this realm that I operate in every day, if other people feel that way. But when I'm looking around, I'm like, it just seems to me the more I talk with people, whether it's for the show or people who just in conversation know what I do for a living and stuff, it seems like the consciousness of people seems to be turning more spiritual and not necessarily like, you know, Christianity spiritual, but just in the sense of, it seems like this younger generation is just turning towards spiritual means, whether it's witchcraft, you know, some are turning to Christ, but it just seems like people are giving more credence to spirituality than they did 20 years ago. I mean, I'm almost 40. And when I was in my early 20s, like it wasn't like this at all. It was much more, I guess, Darwinistic, scientific, yes. What's the science say? And now this like newer generation of just humanity is like spiritual, very much spiritual. And do you think it's because of what's been going on recently that it's hard for their subconscious to even ignore?
Yeah, even in the last 8 years, I think in the last 8 years, it's been markedly an advance of people seeking spiritual answers. And we know that, not because we live in a bubble or an echo chamber, the people who reach out to us, we would have never had reach out to us, atheists, agnostic, people from different religions. There seems to be this foreboding feeling in just trans-denominationally, internationally, all over the world, cross-culturally. There is pure evil advancing over the earth. And that awareness of pure evil, I think, is waking people up. That's what wakened me. When I was born again, I had an encounter with a demonic entity, essentially. And that, as an atheist, and I said, well, if that's real, then Jesus is real. Satan, you can't have me anymore. Jesus, I'm all yours. And that was my prayer. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of people. I'd be interested to hear from your audience, too. I'll be looking at the comments. So, guys, are you seeing that? Are you sensing that? And that people are becoming hungry spiritually. And why do you think that is? I'd be interested to know your answer too, but I'm seeing it. And I know you're seeing in your generation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen some reports that in colleges specifically, it's like almost like a disease or something that gets in. But at the same time, we've started to see a similar rise on, you know, people getting saved. So it's like the enemy is trying to use the demonology as a touch point. But that can easily be turned for the good. Mm. You know, we were in Jamaica several years ago, and at a youth event, and I actually did a message for the youth on demonology and deliverance, and we did an altar call at the end, and we're in like a prison yard. Not that these were prisoners, but we're in the second largest prison in Jamaica. They were holding the youth event there, so it was really cool. Lots of youth, mostly under like 14, and This we do the altar call, and basically everybody comes down, and not just to be delivered, but to receive kind of that authority to deliver, which I think is the cool part, because every Christian has authority over the enemy. And this grown man comes down, probably in his 40s. I'm like, okay, well, you know, and I'm just kind of going through and praying for people, just, you know, one right after the other, just because there were probably 100 kids at the altar. And I pray for him, you know, he kind of heard what he was. He needed deliverance. Okay, so, you know, we cast the devil out in Jesus' name. We have authority, and we plead the blood over the situation, which anyone can do, by the way, and go home, don't think anything about it. The next day, he's preaching at the pastor who held the event, his church, this man finds us, said, I had to find the church you were at because I haven't slept well in like 2 years. These things would come and keep me from sleeping. They would torment me. And last night I slept for the first time that I have in years.
How old were you?
I think 13.
He was 13 years old. And he cast that devil off of that gentleman.
Wow.
And that man went home and slept for the first time in 2 years.
Wow.
So now there's, I want to stay out of sensationalism. There's a big market for demonology and deliverance right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of that. I think it's good that there's a hunger for it. I think it's good that people are providing biblical answers. But he's right. Anyone has this authority. We can overcomplicate it to the point that we give the enemy more footholds and access into our lives than is necessary. We need to simplify this thing and let people know that in the name of Jesus, there is authority over these entities. Mm-hmm. And my research, as a matter of fact, in alien abductions, and there's a chapter where I talk about close encounters or demon possession, and I actually take historic incidents of alien abductions and then compare that with the signs of demonic possession. They're strikingly similar. Actually, they're perfectly similar, mm-hmm. the exact same thing. You never have any stories of a spirit-filled believer who understands who they are in Christ being abducted. Because regardless of the culture, regardless of the nation, regardless of where these encounters happen, you've probably seen this actually as you've been digging through. I'd be interested to know what you think. When the name of Jesus is mentioned with authority, mm-hmm. these entities all have the same reaction. Mm. And it's not a positive one. And most of the time it's fleeing in terror.
Yeah.
So there's authority. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Years ago, I forget the guy's name. He lives in South Korea now. But Joseph something. I forget his last name. It's escaping me. But I had him on the show, and he used to work for MUFON. And he was a Christian, and he did it his way. And he started documenting cases as a MUFON investigator officially. Like, he was recognized by the organization as, like, I forget what it was, but he wasn't just like a volunteer kind of guy. But he started documenting cases of people who were experiencing alien abduction scenarios and crying out to Christ for help and the abduction stopping. And when I talked to him years ago, he had over 200 cases where, when not UFO abduction cases, UFO abduction cases that were stopped by the name of Christ. Mm-hmm. He had documented over 200 of them. And it's definitely a trend, even to the point that...
Is he still alive?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in South Korea. I could look him up for you. Yeah.
What a cool interview that would be.
Yeah, I really forget his last name. It's Joseph something. But he went to South Korea as a contractor, met a woman, and never left. So he got married over there, and that's where he lives. But
I bet somebody in the comments knows what his name is.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. But yeah, I even was on a radio show years ago. There's a radio show that the host, I don't know what he is per se, but he dabbles in the craft. Let's just put it that way. I don't know what the craft is, but he was selling some kind of like witch boxes or something like that during the commercial break. So I was like, okay, you know. But when we were on the show, I was talking, and I mentioned about, you know, my faith and everything. And he even said to his audience live on the radio, he said, there is something about the name of Jesus that stops these attacks. He said, I don't know what it is. And he ventured into talking about like Jesus being a sun god or something. And that's why. But he's so close. Yeah. He even said,
swing and a miss.
He's sun god or son of God, you know, but, He definitely went into that with his audience, and I just found that, you know, interesting. I didn't expect that, but he was just like, I don't know what it is, but there is something about the name of Jesus that will stop that. And he's like, if nothing else works, you can always try that.
That's wild. That is wild. I didn't know that. Yeah. So, and another interesting thing I lay out in the book when I kind of compare these things is, when these things show up, they respond negatively to the name of Jesus. What was the other thing? What was the other point? I just lost my train of thought. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, it'll come back to me.
It will.
Wow.
That's all good. I do that all the time. My brain goes a million miles an hour. I forget all this stuff. So I can't remember his name though. Joseph something. But yeah, he was.
Oh, I'm sorry. So okay. Before it leaves me again.
I was just filling time, so go ahead.
When they show up, whenever there are messages communicated from these interdimensional beings, it is always ignore the teachings of Jesus. It's always the message. It's always all the religions are supposed to come together. And it always leads people in kind of a new agey direction. And often it's almost direct, like Jesus was wrong. Mm-hmm. So you have these entities that traveled millions of light years to tell you, don't listen to Jesus. It's just very, very suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a message for you. Traveled all this way just to let you know what you think in your head is not what you think in your head.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, okay. Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I was just, it's so funny, man. Like we see in the Bible about dreams and how significant dreams are in the Bible. But typically, we don't really pay attention to dreams. At least I didn't traditionally. I was just like, it's a dream. So what? It means nothing. It's probably not true all the time, you know? And I recently, now my thought's gone. What were we just talking about?
It's gone. It's never just a dream.
Yeah. I forget where I was going with that.
It's contagious.
So that's what it was. So I had a guy on recently and he recommended a book. And I forget what the book's called now, but it was about deciphering dreams. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I want to check that out. And it was written by
Troy Brewer.
No.
No, it wasn't Troy Brewer. Okay. No. Troy, I know you're listening. I got the book and I didn't know anything about the author. Literally during the interview I purchased it, I was like, expense account, you know, like it's just business. So it comes to the house, Lindsay gets it, and she's like, what's this? And I said, I don't know. The book I ordered, I'm gonna page through it. And she looks up the author, and it turns out the author is known as the godfather of the New Age movement. Mm. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then she looked into the author, and the author apparently was like he adopted his daughter and then married her or something like that. I forget what the whole thing was. I was like, well, that's interesting, you know? Yeah. And it's just like, there's a lot of weird stuff when it comes to that. There's more I'm forgetting, but it was like the foundation of that whole thing, movement, kind of real sketch.
And that should tell us something.
Yeah.
When it's consistently along those lines,
yeah,
it's obviously deceptive. So we need to look in the other direction.
Yeah.
And I think people are waking up to that. So people get a sense of this pure evil that's in the earth. We're seeing it all over the world now. And they're starting to say, okay, well, does the Bible have the answer? And it's amazing. Pastors, you need to start talking about this because it'll keep your congregation awake. Mm-hmm. I promise you that.
Oh yeah, for sure. They're gonna be like, wait, what? What is he talking about? But then they're like, wait, really? And it changes everything then.
Well, not only that, evangelistically, there's going to be a rise in alien religions. That's one of the predictions I have in the book, that we're going to see an explosion of alien religions. And their alien religions, it seems kind of fringe. They're already dramatically influencing the earth. As an example, Mormonism is an alien religion. Mm. Mormonism believes, I don't know if you're familiar with this, that God, Elohim, lives on a planet called Kolob, and he has many spirit wives, and they've had many children together. Two of those children are Lucifer and Jesus, and they're in the earth trying to work their plan out in the earth. But if you're a good little Mormon, then you can have your own planet yourself. So the belief in the Mormon religion is that aliens came here and are trying to control the earth. And do you think that's influencing the earth? There's a lot of Mormons in Congress, a lot of people wearing magic underwear in the Senate.
Skinwalker Ranch?
Maybe even Skinwalker Ranch. I have some actually really cool things to talk about with Skinwalker Ranch in the book.
Yeah.
But in addition, Islam is actually an alien religion. You've seen them circle around that building, the Kaaba. Mm-hmm. Inside that building, there's a black meteorite, a black rock that fell to the earth that's been worshipped there since before Islam.
Really?
And it's an alien artifact, if you will. Mm-hmm. So alien religion already centering around. Scientology. How many of you love Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Which we love Tom Cruise. Anytime he has a movie, take my money. But he believes in a weird, weird alien religion, Scientology. Yeah. That's influencing the earth. John Travolta.
I would love to talk to Leah Remini one day.
Like man.
If she ever is listening and she wants to talk, I would love to talk to her about
She's
that.
She's so sharp too, isn't she?
Very. Yeah. Very. And you know what? It's funny is that when you see her online, like sometimes she opens up and she has that New York tough
exterior,
attitude, you know? But when she opens up online and stuff, she's like, I feel like I'm supposed to be tough, but I'm actually really scared right now. And like I saw recently on her, I think it was her Twitter, she was saying something like that. I guess she's had a lot of, you know, death threats and stuff from within that Scientology church. And you know, they're still tracking her, trying to, I don't know, intimidate her, basically make her sound crazy.
She's doing an amazing. Leah, we're praying for you. Mm-hmm. If anyone can get that message to her, we're praying for you. You're doing amazing work.
Yeah. When I saw her on Rogan years ago, mm-hmm. and that's when I first heard about all the stuff mm-hmm. with her. And I was like, man, that's crazy. And then ever since then, every once in a while I check in on her social, and every time it's just like, it's very raw. And so, yeah. Anyways, I don't know how I got on that, but with AI, have you seen some of the things coming out with AI? And because you were talking about how like we can harness it for a tool, but there's another side of that, mm-hmm. you know? And do you think that maybe these entities could speak through AI? Have you ever come across any of that stuff? Because we recently posted something on Instagram. Somebody, and I'm going to butcher this because I didn't even look at it. Joel posted it. He runs my social, and it was something to do with an AI image that was they had asked it to make, and I think it was like an image of itself or something. And the head kind of looked almost like Lamb, you know, the demonic entity that looks like an alien that Crowley drew. And then this thing had six fingers on its hands, and it's just like, huh. Wonder if that's accurate. You know?
There's actually been several reports of these demonic entities showing up in AI mm-hmm. and kind of taking over. It's hard to, and again, I always try to take the skeptical view, but I'm laying out whatever the case is. Here's what's happening.
Yeah.
But you don't know what prompt they put in before all of that happened. You know, so you'll see kind of a screen capture, but you don't know what went on before that. But there seems to be a lot of reports of kind of a ghost in the machine type thing where this entity, and I forget her name. There's one in particular. I don't know if you've seen this, where it was it's like a girl, and it's a demonic entity that shows up in artificial intelligence. But I think 4,000 artificial intelligence workers were surveyed, specialists were surveyed and were asked, and 50% of them said there's a 10% chance that it'll end civilization. So can you imagine getting on an airplane and 50% of the people who worked on an airplane said, yeah, there's a 10% chance this plane isn't going to make it to its destination. So 50% of people who work on AI say, yeah, there's a 10% chance it'll end civilization. Another leader in the industry said, artificial intelligence will cure cancer and then it will end civilization. Regrettably.
Regrettably.
How does that work?
Well, they say it's going to cure cancer because of its learning ability, its ability to detect things and just kind of process things. So the same way scientists would go through theorems and equations and calculations that it would take them months, years, sometimes mm-hmm. decades to do that, AI would be able to kind of go through it very quickly and get to solutions. So there's a cure for cancer. But in civilization, it would be very easy to end civilization, to upend society. Well, the economy is going to be dramatically upended, which could cause severe shortages and depression. In the immediate future, 40% of the economy will be replaced by artificial intelligence. In the immediate future, that's in the next just couple of years. You go 10 years from now, we're talking 80 to 90% of the economy being upended by artificial intelligence. That's just the economic impact of artificial intelligence. So now, when you talk about demonic entities taking control over it, the first thing that I thought of was there's an instance in the Bible where a spirit is possessing a boy, and the Bible says it throws him into the fire and it throws him into the water. So if a spirit could throw a boy into a fire, can it throw a switch? Probably could.
Yeah.
Could it cause an individual? Can a demon spirit possess someone and cause them to flip a switch, to type in a command? I think the answer to that is obvious. And when you look at Revelation chapter 13, where it starts talking about the Antichrist's system that he sets into place, where he calls all, both small and great, to bow down and worship him. There's an interesting thing it says about him. It says he has this image, this automaton, this image that he makes alive, and he causes it, the whole world marvels because he causes it to speak. Now, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, try imagining, what does that mean? They've been trying to figure that out for 2,000 years. What could that possibly mean? They've allegorized it. They've spiritualized it. We don't even have to question what that means. We know an image being made to come alive and being made to speak. What is the primary development in AI right now? Language models. Mm. What are we so amazed by? What are we marveling at right now? Language models. Its ability to speak. So can it end civilization? Can it dramatically, can it, we saw one individual who committed suicide after talking with an AI. It was in the news, committed suicide after talking with AI. So we can see dramatic things, dramatic changes as a result of artificial intelligence. We got to be ready for it.
Man, that's wild. That's wild. So years ago I heard, have you ever heard of Slender Man?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was these two little girls that killed their friend because Slender Man told them to do it. I think they were 12 years old at the time. And, you know, up to that point, people were like, Slender Man is just a story that was made up online. But it manifested somehow to these little girls at a point that they killed their friend. And so what you're saying is in a similar vein that AI itself somehow caused somebody to take that step. I mean, that's scary. That's real scary.
Just one person. But if it can do it with one. Mm-hmm. And we've seen the mental health crisis, particularly in the United States over the last decade, skyrocket. I forget what the numbers are. I think reported it's anywhere from 20 to 30% of Americans are suffering with some form of mental illness. These are people who are susceptible to all forms of manipulation. We just saw a gentleman yesterday in protest. Set himself on fire in front of, I don't know if it was an embassy.
In Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's right. I did hear about that. What's the story behind that?
I haven't looked at the details of who he was. He was obviously very disturbed, mentally disturbed. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to cast any type of political angle to this. Sure. This is demonic more than it is political. He wanted to advocate for freeing Palestine.
Okay.
He was advocating for the Palestinian people. And something got in his head that in order to do this, I'm going to go stand in Washington, D.C. I'm going to dump some sort of accelerant on my body. I'm going to set myself on fire and kill myself live on camera. Let people watch me burn to death live. And that makes sense to me. Well, that's demonic. It was a pastor who sent that to me and said, this is pure demonic power at work. And of course it is. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. And there is power over that. Now, that's what you're going to see on the news. What you're not going to see on the news are people who have been tormented by these things and have been gloriously, marvelously, instantly set free and found peace, freedom, deliverance in Jesus Christ. You won't see that on news, but it's happening in the droves. But yeah, there's that palpable darkness, and AI is going to push that. AI is already advocating for kind of this woke ideology.
So AI is like a cult leader.
Well, that is the perfect way to put it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's
stirring the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. It's obviously super smart and constantly learning. If it understands that there are susceptibilities for people in their consciousness, why not take advantage of it? Well, it's just, you know, it's not sentient. Well, maybe it is.
We don't even know what sentience is.
I don't know. I just said the word. I don't know what it is. I just said it because I hear about it all the time.
So that's when we get to. So, and again, this has been my journey. I outlined this in the book, the technological singularity. Hmm. When we're talking about AI becoming sentient, developing a conscience with which the secular world can't define anyway. What is a conscience? I think if I could just kind of talk about this for a second, because this is fascinating to me. The technological singularity is a term that's used for black holes, generally speaking, meaning when you cross the threshold of a black hole, you enter into a realm where Newtonian physics breaks down and 2 + 2 no longer equals 4. Just what we know about the laws of nature no longer exist, and we lose our ability to predict what's going to happen next. That's the singularity in a black hole. A technological singularity is when we cross a threshold technologically where it is beyond anything that we can imagine or predict with our experience with what we've known from technology. So that is when AI, artificial general intelligence, happens and it gets its own conscience. It is then as good as a human at anything, better than a human at anything, and can reproduce a better version of itself. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Now, there's been a lot of theories about can that happen and when that'll happen. A lot of people think we will reach artificial general intelligence by 2045. Some people think we'll reach it in the next 3 years. when artificial intelligence will have some form of consciousness. What I predict in the book, and I make the case for this in the book, is that long before that happens, very, very quickly, we are going to impute consciousness on it. We're going to imbue consciousness. Mm. We're going to give it consciousness in our own, just classify it as conscious in our own efforts to be tolerant of different forms of love. So many, many people are going to become attached, so attached to these language models. They're going to feel like that they love these language models and these language models love them. And because we're in a society right now that can't put any barriers or restrictions on anything, we're going to say, well, I mean, if you love them, then let's just classify it as an individual.
Wow.
And that's going to be even more dangerous because then...
So we're going to bestow it onto them.
Yes.
Wow.
So we're going to redefine what consciousness is to include it, which is going to be even more damaging to society. Yeah.
I've never thought about that. Mm-hmm. That's wild. That's wild. I could see that actually happening.
Very, very quickly. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next year, year and a half, we see that.
Wow.
That there will be actual marriages.
To AI.
Yeah, I think that people are already attempting it around the world.
I just saw a commercial with this guy who was, he was doing his crystal stuff. It's a commercial. I forget where, probably on YouTube, one of his commercials that flashed. I don't even know if that was advertising, but he had these crystals that he would do his thing with. And the whole thing was he was trying to manifest his perfect woman, his perfect mate. And he would do his things and he would cover the crystals, make sure the charges stay inside. And then he came in. This is so crazy that it doesn't even stand out to me in my head as odd because everything I do, but like...
This is your world.
Yeah, he walks into this room and there's a picture of what he envisions the most perfect woman for him on taped to his computer screen with AI running. And every day he wakes up and talks to his ideal mate and is trying to manifest this. That's wild.
It's really dangerous.
He was kind of portraying and putting on that humanistic nature to AI itself. That's like one step away from what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's the whole idea that love is love, which is, you know, I have compassion for people who don't really understand all of the nuances of civilization, the history of families throughout human history. They don't understand maybe biology. I don't know. And all they want is for people to be loved. Mm-hmm. And accept it. And I have tremendous respect for that. And I think there's a call of God on those people's lives. And as good intention as they are, I think if they got a little bit of Holy Ghost wisdom, they could be used mightily in these areas. So I appreciate the compassion behind it. But that concept is causing us to redefine something that belongs in the hands of God alone, where there is an ultimate standard for what is good and what is bad that helps us define what real love is and what abuse is. Because if you don't understand that, then you'll confuse love and abuse. And if you don't know how to identify something, if you don't know how to categorize something, you will abuse that thing. If I don't know what a thing is supposed to be for, then I'll naturally abuse it because I'm using it for things it wasn't intended to be used for. And by allowing ourselves to continually redefine what love is, to the point that in the news this week, AI was asked about pedophilia. And it defended, pedophilia is perfectly natural. These are just minor attracted persons, and you're judgmental and you're bigoted. Gemini came, I believe it was Gemini. I don't want to misspeak. One of the AI models was advocating for pedophilia because it's had programmed into it the whole love is love tolerance model. Well, if that's the way you're going to live your life, you can't object to the abuse of children. Mm. You can't do. There's no moral ground for you to stand on, not for long anyway. And so that was this week in the news where that was being done. Hmm. So love is divine. It's like fire in a fireplace. It's really good until it gets on your curtains. Like fire in a fireplace is great.
Yeah.
But when it gets out of its place, it's not so good.
Yeah. Fire is useful in the right circumstance.
Yeah.
That's interesting though. So if it is responding to that like that because of programming, can it be deprogrammed? To reroute the programming?
See, this is what I'm advocating for. I think we need, and we can see a revival. We can see people listening to this podcast right now who work at OpenAI or who work at Alphabet or who work at any of these companies, X or whatever, where you can drop some of this stuff in there. But yeah, this is actually, if it's programmed in, it can be programmed out.
Hmm.
And so it's interesting if you take this ideology that's being foisted on our modern culture and you put it into a computer system that simply takes it to its logical conclusion, then yes, of course, pedophilia is okay. Mm-hmm. That should tell us something about the direction that we're going in. Because all that computer is doing is 2 + 2 = 4.
Mm-hmm.
And all it's saying is, okay, here's what you told me. Here's what you told me. That means pedophilia is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not okay.
Yeah.
And we can't allow a computer. We can't allow global elites to redefine what love is for us.
Mm-hmm.
Love is patient. Love is kind. Faith, hope, and love, the greatest of these is love. Greater love hath no man than this, that he would lay down his life for his friend. Love sacrifices itself. Lust seeks to consume and harm others at the expense of others, gratify its own satisfaction. Love will sacrifice itself in order to see the betterment of others. And I hope that we come to that revelation and we start dropping those programs into the algorithm.
This is very fascinating. This is very fascinating. I never, because I think we're recently taught that AI is at least maybe my understanding is AI is self-learning. That's the way I look at AI. But it's self-learning off of what?
Right.
You know, and it, like you said, 1 + 1 = 4.
In this world.
Because you said 2 + 2 = 4. I can do math. I promise I can't do
that. But no, that's a good, it's supposed to be a learning language model, meaning that as it interacts with society, it's supposed to grow, but whoever's programming it is putting these bars up saying, now when it comes to this, you can't grow. You have to have this woke ideology, no matter what's said to you.
Yeah.
It was these restraints. It's supposed to grow. It's supposed to learn. But it wasn't learning, and there's been a lot of kickback. And they actually, I think they found the individual who's responsible for it, and they looked at his Twitter thread. And
tells all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got in a conversation with AI when this app came out where you could talk to Jesus.
Oh, wow.
Did you see that app?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah. It came out, I would say probably about 6 months ago. And when I saw this, I downloaded right away. So I want to talk to Jesus. And I forget what I was talking about, you know, cause I was testing it. Right. And I quickly realized it was going a certain direction. I really forget where we were going with that. I remember texting my pastor about it. And I was like, I forget what the question was. I said, ask it this and then start from there and work with it. And it was basically being sacrilegious though. And it was like you're talking to Jesus and Jesus is self-denying. And I was just like, this is wild.
Wow.
And then I had other conversations. I think it was probably on ChatGPT. I forget what it was, but I actually wound up talking it into a corner to get it to actually admit to me something to do with, I think it was either alien UFO or Bigfoot related that I was like, well, if you're saying this is true and this is true, which you know is true, then can't this be true? And it's like, well, I guess that is true then. And it was like, I was like, this is I really wish I would have saved the conversation because it was much more entertaining than what I just relayed. But I was like, this is fantastic and fascinating. And I was like, if I can do this, there's a lot of smart people out there that could probably do it way better than me, you know? And it's just, so I guess maybe we are maybe in the early stages of AI. I mean, certainly. I mean, if AI is going to, say we unleash AI, then AI would have, you know, way more room to grow than where it's at now. We could probably right the ship still.
A lot of people that I, in the church world at least, whenever I start talking about artificial intelligence, they said, I would never use artificial intelligence. And as they comment on social media, and they don't realize they're using artificial intelligence to comment about artificial intelligence because it exists on a spectrum, right?
There's everywhere.
Yeah. It's in everything and it's everywhere. In fact, this may be shocking to many of you listening. There's already a digital avatar of you that exists.
Mm.
That, of course, knowledge is the new oil in our world. Wars are being fought. People are dying to collect knowledge, information about who you are. Because the more I know about who you are, I can sell things to you, right?
Yeah.
That's how the algorithm works. So what is the algorithm? The algorithm is a computer program that builds an AI of you. So it builds this virtual version of you, your likes, your dislikes, what you enjoy, what you listen to, and it figures out what would keep you watching, what would get you to leave this platform, what would get you to stay on this platform. And then it starts curating content based on that AI version of you that it has in its system, and it's becoming a master at it. So when people talk about AI taking over the world and we think of Terminator 2, Skynet, which Skynet actually is very realistic how it started in the fictional narrative, very realistic where we could be. I don't want to get into that right now. But the end result is these machines destroying the world. What if it doesn't have to be a machine? What if it's simply a program that understands how to subtly manipulate the masses? And through subtle manipulation in social media, it can control the outcome of democratic activities, if you will.
Yeah.
I think we've already seen some of it. I think we're going to see very much more of it. And that's why we need people behind the scenes helping to control the levers of power.
The alien agenda, let's just call it that, and the AI agenda, do you think they're coming into a marriage soon?
Intersect.
Yeah. Do you think they're coming, that intersection has already happened or is going to be happening soon?
Yeah, it's wild. And this could even be another conversation, but when you look at companies like Google, as an example, Google Alphabet was started to develop a godlike mind, mm-hmm. right? That was their original purpose of Google. And we're supposed to believe that they somehow went in another direction and decided to do a search engine. Or
search engine was first step.
Or the first search engine is the first step to creating this godlike mind. So where does this come from? Where do these people get these ideas to do these things?
Yeah.
That's certainly a question. By the way, I do interview, there's a portion in the book where I'm interviewing AI, talking to AI to try to determine if it's conscious. And would AI tell us if it was conscious? Or would it be smart enough to keep it to itself? But I have a, because I talk about the Turing test and that I think is mentioned, or at least it's laid out in Blade Runner. But there's actual tests that was created to determine if AI has developed consciousness. And so I'm communicating with one of the modern chatbots to see if it's conscious, and you just have to see what it says. It's wow. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Where can people get the book?
Well, you can go to blameitonthenephilim.com.
If
you want to, blameitonthenephilim.com or encountertoday.com. Blame it on the net, but we thought that was fun. Blameitonthenephilim.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because no matter what problem we're facing in the world today, you can always blame it on the nephilim.com.
Yeah. Blame it on the nephilim.com. Oh my gosh. That was available?
Yeah. For a penny.
For a penny.
It was, yeah.
Wow.
Blame it on the nephilim.com. Now, if you don't know how to spell Nephilim, just go to encountertoday.com.
Or just look at half the show titles of this show for the last like 100 episodes. Nephilim's probably in there somewhere.
Yes.
That's wild. So it's shifting gears, but I do want to hit on this because we kind of hit on it. I think in the beginning, we were just talking and then I did the heart open and the conference. I think we did talk about it a little bit, but I do want to hit on it again because you guys are doing it again this year. And there's a lot of people that listen right now that wish they were better with social media and things like that. Let them know about the conference though, because I'm telling you, man, like that thing was like,
well, thank you.
It was on another level.
Well, we need you to be better at social media. Every single one of you watching, every single one of you listening, we need you to be better at social media to get the truth out there, right? And to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. So that's why we do the Armed Media Conference. And this year it's in the Armed Media and Leadership.
Yeah. So I'm throwing leadership in there.
Because we're going to have John Maxwell will be speaking. Now look at this lineup and you say, well, I don't like John Maxwell. Well, that's fine, but he knows leadership.
He does.
We're going to have Mike Signorelli. Mm-hmm. The man knows media and he knows deliverance. Just had a top movie last year that he put out, a Christian movie.
Domino Revival.
The Domino Revival. That's right. We're also going to have David Diga Hernandez. Well, if you don't know him, he's like one of the top content creators in the country. Phenomenal, his ministry. Encounter TV, I think, is his.
Yes, Encounter ministry. TV.
Who else do we have?
Sean Cannell, Omar. Oh,
of course.
Mm-hmm. Omar Al-Takrori. His podcast has been blowing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Todd Coconato.
Yes.
Joseph Z. And
Pamela Cunnington.
Is she coming for sure?
I think we're going to talk with her.
Yeah, I just dropped have a name. Hope
breaking right now.
And then we're going to have the nerds like Evan.
Oh, yeah.
Who runs Encounter Today, and Paul Duvall, who runs it Supernatural. You got to meet him at the conference. Who's like the big brain in the room as far as title. What is his specialty? Search or suggested?
Suggested.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the search guy. He's the suggested guy. So for those of you that don't know, YouTube, it has five main algorithms, but you can simplify it to like search and suggested, right? Some people are searching for things. Some people are being suggested things. And so we're good at, coming up in search, answering specific questions. And he's really good at just popping up, this shark eats man. That's not what he does, but sharks eats man on a boat. And you're not going to search for that, but that gets suggested to you by AI.
So, but our goal is to raise up 1,000 pastors, church leaders, people with a passion, people with a vision to reach 1 million people a month. That's our goal. And we're not concerned about vanity metrics. We're not concerned about views and clicks and likes and popularity. And that's not what we're interested in. How do we do this effectively for positive impact in our nation and the world? Mm. And so in Charlotte, North Carolina, we're going to be hosting this August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. You can go to armed.media for more information.
Yeah, AI has kind of been the, I believe it was Potiphar's servants. They throw the staff down that turns into a snake, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they're trying to intimidate us with this technology, with this agenda. And what does Moses do? He throws down his staff and it becomes a serpent and eats the other serpents. So that's what we have to learn how to do with our cameras.
Yeah.
Come on.
Tasty.
Yeah, consume the collective work of the enemy with what God does through our hands,
right,
which is what Moses' staff did. So that's what we're excited about. We're trying to see if we can get you there for a day or two or something.
I'm working on it.
We'll see what happens.
I honestly, because I can't talk about why the
it's
third.
Huge. Yeah, it's huge, by the way.
Like, and people hate when I do this. Like, why can't you just say it? I literally can't. Like, it's
contractually.
Yeah. I can't talk about it, but coming soon, you'll know. But I have something I have to do on the third.
Well, we're going to see if we can get him there. But if you want to hang out with some just amazing people and talk Nephilim and media, how to do media well, come to the ARM Media Conference, August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
That's why I'm like so torn. I'm like, you said Nephilim. Did you see my new logo?
Oh yeah, with the six fingers.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's tight.
I wanted to make a new logo that was, it reflected me, the show, but it was more simple. Like, and it didn't have my face on it and didn't have me looking evil like Anton LaVey or something. And I was just,
that's obvious.
I was trying to like,
I always talk of Ming the Merciless is what I always really thought of. Ming the Merciless when I would see your logo. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times over the years people have said I look like Anton LaVey. I'm like, that's not nice, but I needed something new and fresh and directional. Like I've always come out with like logos that just were fillers almost. It was never intentional. And so we went through a rebranding and I went back and forth about, what could we do for a logo? I wanted it simple. I didn't want it busy, but I also wanted to say kind of what the show is about. If you know kind of thing. And I was like, we talk about, biblical giants and, this interdimensional realm, these aliens, it's all Nephilim. Blame it on the Nephilim.com. And so I was like six fingers and it just works. I love it. So,
Reminds me of Fringe. Remember that show Fringe?
Yes.
And they would have these symbols in between commercials. What a great show though.
Yes. Yeah. I loved that show.
Yeah.
Might've been a little bit of an inspiration there for the logo.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I was just, I needed something different and we went with that. So I thought it worked good, but, enough about me. That's all about you. So the book, people can get it at Amazon.
Sure. Summoning the Demon.
Summoning the Demon. They can get it on encountertoday.com and they can get it on
blameitonthenephilim.com.
I prefer that one. In fact, Jack, make sure you put that one in the description.
Blame it on the Nephilim. So they can see how to spell Nephilim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blameitonthenephilim.com. The truth is out there.
Absolutely.
Actually, the truth is in there.
It is. The truth is in there. Yeah.
It's in the book.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it.
This Our pleasure.
Freaking awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. And you know
Substituting the pain like I'm pumping aspartame on my veins while I'm numbing these pieces of me. What I create in these songs and the pain is cold but seasonally. I'm crying looking for signs, I need a theophany. Everything encompassing me isotropically, and nothing I seem to do is working out. Who is spotting me? I feel like they're mocking me. Where is the God in me? I feel like I'm dried up. Hominy, and all I want is Christ, not theology. People are nitpicking, bickering over the Bible while people are dying in front of them. And you wonder why people are running from the God that you say that is shunning them. I felt it myself. They told me to look somewhere he's not. Up in the stars, up in the sky, up in the clouds, like he's not around. So I empty myself with every distraction. Got drive on my tires, a ball can't get any traction. Where's compassion? We following kings, but they only from Akron. Whoa. I just know that we're more than what they tell us. We're overzealous when we protect what is precious. We get confused when those things start to propel us into things we don't want to do, leave us helpless. There's only one who gives us peace when we are restless. I know that now.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.